I wish you all a very happy Friday and hope you have a wonderful weekend prepared. And in the midst of that weekend, make sure you get to church. All of you need a home congregation where you can worship and fellowship and pray and praise and serve and study and encourage and be encouraged, because that's part of the Christian lifestyle. If you do not have a place like that that you call home, you need to get out there, do your research, and find a place. Get plugged in, stay plugged in. If you happen to be looking right now for a place like that and you're within driving distance of Elkhart East, I invite you, please come, check us out, and maybe settle in with us. Fridays, I also like to say a big thank you to all of you who are supporting Into the Word financially. We couldn't keep it on the air here without that assistance. If there are others that would like to help, it's easy enough to do. Just write down the contact information you'll hear at the end of today's program. Then send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it will be applied to the radio broadcast fees. I want you to turn to Genesis chapter number 2, where we've been seeing the fleshed-out story of the creation of humanity. We have kind of the smaller story in chapter 1, the expanded version in chapter number 2. We saw how God formed the first human being, a male, out of the dust of the ground, made the body exactly the way God wanted it. And then he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, the energy, the Spirit of God. And that body and that breath together became a living soul, became a living individual. And so after making that first human male, God then took him and placed him in a protected area, protected in the sense that it has some sort of clear dividing barricade around it or perimeter around it. He places him in this paradise, this garden of pleasure, of Eden, and he then starts showing him all of these fast-grown trees, fast-grown shrubs, and probably grain plants, and vegetable, and fruit trees, and all of these different things that are now going to be given to him as a food source, and gives him the basic rules of life in the Garden of Eden. This is what it says in verse 16. He who is God commanded the man, saying, "You may surely eat of every tree of the garden, and the bushes, the plants, all of that, everything that's edible. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you dying will die. Dying you shall die." Which is, as I closed with last session, it's a Hebrew idiom for guaranteed to come to pass. And so Adam dies before reaching 1,000 years. Now that sounds like a long time for us, but the reality is that Adam was created to be forever. And if he had never sinned and kept eating of the tree of life in the garden, he would have never died. So what verse 17's warning is, if you make the free will choice to disobey me and eat or even touch this specific tree that I'm telling you about, I'm warning you about ahead of time, you won't get to live forever. Dying, you shall die. Guaranteed. That day, I guarantee you, you will be a mortal person. Now, verse 18, still happening at the beginning of the daylight hours of day number 6. Then he who is God said, "It is not good that man should be alone." Now, this is the first time God has negated that statement. Because before he said, "It is good, it is good, it is good, it is good." And I've highlighted each time that that's his way of saying it's exactly according to my design specs. It's exactly as I intended. It's exactly as I planned. And so now he gets to the point where he says, no, this isn't good. We've got to have more here. We've got to move to the other part of my plan. It's not good for this male to remain all by himself. I will make him a helper fit for him. And the phraseology here is that he's going to have a match. And we already know that God had planned on doing this because it's in the first chapter's wording. Let us make man, humanity, in our image and our likeness, and then put them, plural, in charge of this creation. And so God made man male and female. So God had always intended humanity to be a two-gender group, male and female. And so here in this chapter, it's highlighting the idea that God intended them to be a matched set. Now, he had already done this with the animals that he'd made on day 6. Verse 19 tells us that. Now, out of the ground, he who is God had formed, and that's the idea that he'd already made these land animals. We're talking about all the four-footed animals and the ones that have spinal columns and brains, and they have good intelligence, and they breathe air, and they motivate on 4 feet or 2 feet. So all of those animals, the different kinds, which are very wide in the definition here. So let's say God had already made all of the ape kinds, and God had already made all of the equine kinds, and he'd made all of the bovine kinds, and he'd made all of the canine kinds, and all of the the different types of bird kinds. He'd made the ones that would be able to breed and produce. And I shared with you, that's the best way to think of kind, is if they can interbreed, they're of the same kind. They're of the same genetic pool originally. So you can take lions and tigers and breed them because they're of the same kind. They have a shared common ancestor that God made at the very beginning. All right, so God has already made all of those intelligent, air-breathing creatures on the land. And so now he brings them to Adam. It says, "Now out of the ground, he who is God had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens, and brought them to Ha-Adam, to the man, to see what he would call them." So this is the beginning of Adam utilizing part of the image of God, the creativity, the curiosity, the observational skills. And so here come all of these animals paraded in front of him, and he looks at them and he says, well, that's going to be, and then he gives it a name. And more than likely, it was something descriptive of the animal. Now, that means that he was fully formed with intelligence, that had speech capability and decision capability and description capability. So he came with that full onboard package in his brain. And so whatever the man called every living creature, that was its name. Now, the names that we have today have come through a lot of different other generations and a lot of different other cultures, but it is interesting that many of the names are quite descriptive, aren't they? The one that immediately pops into my mind is Hippopotamus. Hippopotamus is the Greek word which means river horse. So when the Greeks saw that great big critter playing around in the waters of Africa, they said, it's like a horse that's in the river. And so that's how it got its name. So that's probably something similar to what Adam is doing here. But there's something else that's happening. Pay attention. Verse 20. The man gave names to all the livestock. These are the four-footed animals. To the birds of the heavens, to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helper fit for him. So all of these creatures that have spinal columns, brains, breathe oxygen, move around on the land, they all come in male-female sets. That's the way God designed it. And Adam is taking note of that as he names each of them. There's two of them. That one looks a little different than that one, but there's two of them that are clearly belonging to the same set. That's the same with the next one. That's the same with the next one. That's the same with the next one. And so as he goes through the naming procedure, which, remember, he doesn't have to name all of the different subgroups of poodles and cats because they don't exist yet. It's just the base kind. Probably a few thousand land animals of the different kinds. He names them, and each one has its match. But he doesn't have a match. And so this rouses up inside of him the desire, I need my match. And God has already had the plan to make his match. So this is where God kind of maneuvers Adam's mind to get ready for the great unveiling. Verse number 21. So he who is God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man. So it's the first time that he loses consciousness. He's just barely come into existence, and now God causes him to lose consciousness. And while he slept, took one of his ribs. Now, that's a little bit too precise. It basically took from his side and then closed up its place with flesh. So God effectively takes genetic material from Adam and uses it as the source material for making Eve. Now, he could have made Eve from scratch, just like he did Adam. Could have done it right in front of Adam. But God has something of a lesson in mind. So he takes genetic material, which is interesting because the rib area, the side area, has a lot of source material for stem cells there in the marrow of the bones. And so he takes all of that basic material, building block material, and makes it into a woman shape. It's basically just like Adam with some tweaked differences. And that's absolutely true about the difference between the male and female gender. They are basically the same in the majority. But there are some very special differences at just the right points in the genetic makeup. And so, verse 22, the rib that he who is God had taken from the man, he made into a woman and brought her to the man. So Adam wakes up. God allows him to have consciousness come back to him. Maybe God hands him a little leaf from the tree of life, kind of wipe that on the incision point and clean that up and take care of it. But then God introduces him to somebody that looks very much like him, his matched set, his matched pair partner, just like all of the animals that he's just been naming. And so that causes him then to go into another naming session. Then the man said, "This at last is bone of my bones." So somehow God either communicated to him or Adam knew instinctively that this genetic material was what was used to make this woman. "This is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called Isha." Now that's the Hebrew. "Because she was taken out of Ish." That is the Hebrew words for man and woman. And in most of the languages of the world, there is this close connection between the two gender designators that continues to keep this story alive, male and female. Another good example of that. And so God's original design, and it was not kind of an off-the-cuff thing, it was something that he had always intended to do, was that there would be one man and one woman together for a lifetime as a pair, that they would be completing each other. They are not exactly like one another, but they are very, very similar. And that is the basis of marriage. Because, again, we're reading from the big book of beginnings, and it is God providing this information to Moses. Verse 24, "Therefore, a man," and this is the idea of Ish again, "Therefore, a man," or a male, "shall leave his father and his mother." Now, Adam doesn't know anything about fathers and mothers practically yet. That comes later. But God already knows that that's part of the plan, that there will be this replication that's going to go on and on. And so each man, the original intention was, each man would, as an adult, leave his father and his mother, you know, the pair that produced him, and then hold fast to his wife. And the word wife here is Isha, and so it's actually his woman, and they shall become one flesh. So it just goes on. It just keeps getting repeated. Each man and woman produces other males and females. And as those males and females grow up, they leave their parents and find their partner of the opposite gender, and they become a new pair. And they become one flesh. Now, there is some sexual activity components to that phrase, but there's more to it than that, because when men and women come together and have sexual activity, there are all sorts of chemical interactions that take place in the brain and elsewhere in the body. And this begins to cement the two people together emotionally, spiritually. It's got to do with that, the word that English Standard Version is translated as hold fast. Other passages talk about this as being cleave or glued together, adhered together. So becoming one flesh, this couple just keeps reinforcing relationship over and over and over all through their life so that they are one. They are a unit. They are a pair. And that was God's original intention. When sin came into the world, it brought with it disruptions of that original intention. And that is why we have things like sexual immorality, where people sleep around, which is never a good choice, because what you're doing is you're trying to make a special connection with more than one person. And that will be confusing, I guarantee you, which is why every last one of you that is currently single, you should not be engaging in sexual activity with anyone. You should hold off on that until you make the commitment. Then reinforce the development of that relationship with that person and that person only. Adultery has come into existence as a problem. Polygamy as well, which feeds into the same thing. You've got more than one relationship that you're trying to develop physically and mentally and chemically, and that is confusing and problematic. And so marriage is intended to be the God-given mechanism to protect the original intention of God, even in a time of chaos, such as we live in now. So verse 24 of Genesis 2 describes marriage. And then it says this, verse 25, the man and his wife were both naked and they were not ashamed. Shame comes from having done something wrong and realizing it. And one of the things that happens when we do something that is out of step with the rules and the customs is that we don't want anybody looking at us. Just think about the last time you saw something happen in a group of kids. I'm talking about younger kids, where they did, one of the kids did something that was not right. It broke the norms. And almost immediately, they'll say something along the lines of, quit looking at me! Or they'll cover their face with their hands, or they'll pull the covers up over their head if they're near a bed, or they'll try to climb underneath the table or underneath a chair or a cabinet because they don't want to be seen, because there's something physiological happening inside them where they've stepped out of the bounds. And that's called shame. We actually have a physical reaction that our blood flow will even redden our face and our skin. And so these guys are not in that state because they haven't done anything wrong. And so they have no desire to cover anything up. I'm sure that in the perfect world, if it had remained intact, that clothing would have eventually been invented, but it would have been done as decoration. But as we'll see eventually, the first bit of clothing was done out of shame. But at this point, there is no shame. There is just one man and one woman that are in love with each other and want to spend eternity together. Now, God then picks up the story back in our first chapter. verse number 28. God blessed them. Blessing is basically wishing well. So God wished the couple well. And he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. That's exactly what he had said about the animals, that they needed to reproduce and fill the different niches of this brand new world. God goes on and says, and subdue it. That English language has it carries with it a little bit of an idea of beating something into submission, doesn't it? And I don't think you should think of it in that sense. And the next line is, and have dominion over. And we talked about that idea that this is not, you know, using in a vicious, mean fashion. Effectively, God was saying at this point, all right, guys, make yourself to home. All of this I did for you. Enjoy it. Make the most of it. And that is exactly what he'd intended. And then he was going to just simply visit them on a regular basis. So have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the flying things of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for your food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, or flying thing of the heavens, to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that's that has the breath of life, I've given every green plant for food. And it was so. So we started out creation as vegetarians. Everyone. Everything. All the animals. It is sin that changed the world so dramatically that caused God to open up the menu to flesh.